Greeny with Mike Greenberg, the podcast.
All right, rolling along. Greeny with you here on ESPN Radio. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Good fun being had today. If you're just joining us here, we went through the two betting scandals in sports in some detail and depth here. The Shohei Ohtani on one side and the NBA Jontay Porter story on the other. Both of those are developing. We will keep you posted as things go. We talked some basketball with Tim Legler, who was in our studio, and we've had a little fun along the way as well. Let's move on. Oh, and I tried to clear up the fact that I was just kidding yesterday. I'm not criticizing anyone else. The God's honest truth of it is this. I've been a broadcaster 30-something years. This is what I do for a living, and I take it pretty seriously. I try not to take us too seriously, but I do take seriously my responsibility sitting here. If it wasn't obvious that I was kidding about the UConn thing yesterday, then that's on me. It's not on anybody else. I thought it was obvious I was kidding, but if it wasn't obvious I was kidding, then that's not the fault of anybody else who misinterpreted. They didn't, because they didn't misinterpret. They interpreted. It is my job to be clear enough. So that bothered me yesterday, but only because it's such a stupid thing to say that it is now, the fact that it was being associated with me is just awful. And I had this horrible fear that someone would ask Jason Tatum about it last night. Or something like that. And I was just like, oh, good God. So anyway, for what it's worth, I'm not blaming anyone. No one is at fault. No one did anything wrong here but me. But I do not think UConn would make the playoffs in the NBA. Okay, so we'll move on from that. Next, let's go to some of this football stuff. While I was away, the Pittsburgh Steelers made two moves. Actually, they made one of them while I was still here. They made the move for Russell Wilson while I was still here. And then the trade that we had been waiting for of Justin Fields from Chicago finally took place literally the day I went on vacation, which was disappointing for me, but I think outstanding for him and for the team. And so here's what I tweeted. I tweeted, in 6 days, the Steelers made the two shrewdest QB moves the NFL has seen in years. Almost zero risk, enormous potential reward, times two. Plus, willing to admit a mistake and cut losses with a first-round pick. That is elite franchise management across the board. That tweet, which I posted the day this trade was made, received a lot of attention, almost all of it very favorable. It had something like 20,000 likes the last time I looked, or something like that, some very high number of likes. But I'm told there's one person who disagreed with it, and that person is sitting in this room.
I think it's crazy. I think it is absolutely crazy.
What part of that could you possibly think is crazy?
The notion that the Steelers are in, say, considerably better shape right now than they were the day before they acquired Russell Wilson, to me, is crazy. Patently crazy. They're going to play the Bengals twice next year with Joe Burrow. They're going to play the Ravens twice next year with Lamar Jackson. And they're going to play the Browns twice next year, a team that made the playoffs last year using five different starting quarterbacks. And the best you might say is that the Steelers are going to have the better quarterback in one or two of those games. The Steelers definitely won the transactions. I will give you that. Paying Russell Wilson and Justin Fields something like $4.5 million is the definition of shrewd business. And you put that in your tweet, and I agree with that. But I want to make clear, the Steelers are the worst team in the AFC North right now. That is not just my opinion. It is reflected strongly in the odds. They are twice as likely to finish last as anyone else based upon the odds. And so I don't really understand the notion of this upside play here for a quarterback who is done in Russell Wilson and a quarterback in Justin Fields who has only really flashed. And so as far as I'm concerned, they just traded one quarterback that no one wanted for two quarterbacks that no one wanted.
So I think either of the two quarterbacks they just got are better options than the quarterbacks they had. What you're describing is they didn't become the best quarterback situation in the league. And what I'm telling you is those options weren't on the table. Had Kansas City offered them Patrick Mahomes, I'm sure they would have taken it. But under the circumstances, to get Justin Fields, who there was a moment in time with Adam Schefter, who knows as much about football as literally anyone, not the sport itself, but the business of it itself, who thought it was not inconceivable that he would wind up getting traded for a first-round pick. The fact that they got him for a sixth-round pick that could at most turn into a fourth-round pick, and they have no financial obligation to him in the long term, and that they took on a very motivated Russell Wilson, who might still have something left in him, and at minimum will be better than what they had, and they paid him $1 million and whatever it is extraordinary. They probably have the cheapest quarterback room in the entire NFL, which means they can surround those players with all kinds of other good players that most other teams don't have the luxury of doing. Look at the Dallas Cowboys, who are paralyzed by the contracts that they're dealing with. The Steelers, who you are telling me are so likely to finish last, mm-hmm. with terrible quarterbacks, made the playoffs last year.
They did.
They make the playoffs with less. That coach does more with less than anybody routinely. But my final point, because everything else you said I can't really contradict, except to say I remain a Justin Fields believer. I think we try to put what has happened sometimes is that we try to put everyone into boxes and we decide Justin Fields has to be X because Y doesn't work. But what he does, what his Y is meaningful. It is good. And everyone keeps telling me that Arthur Smith took Ryan Tannehill, who I don't think had anywhere near the talent that Justin Fields does, and certainly didn't have anywhere approaching the college career that Justin Fields had, and turned him into a well above average NFL quarterback for a period of time. I don't see why you cannot take this kid, the lump of clay that is Justin Fields, and mold him into something that you can win with in a significant way. And if you've got that defense that they have and those weapons that they have and that elite coach that they have, I give them a puncher's chance. I would bet you anything you want they don't finish last next year.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You'd make that bet.
Yes.
They're going to finish fourth in that division, and this is going to be Mike Tomlin's first losing season. They went 10-7 last year, but they beat Jake Browning twice, and they beat Tyler Huntley once. That's the reason they went 5-1 within their division. By the way, Kenny Pickett in the second half of the 2022 season play better than we've seen Justin Fields play his entire career. And that's just a fact. Coming into last season, everyone was super high on Kenny Pickett and the Steelers' offense. You're acting as if he's Zach Wilson. He's not. I mean, Kenny Pickett was a real quarterback.
He was healthy enough to play at the end of last season, and they chose not to play him. There was stuff going on there. And they get to give up on a first-round pick in 2 years, I can't tell you I know what it is. People much closer to that team, the Brooke Pryors of the world, may have a much better idea than I do. But there was something going on there that was not right.
Maybe so. It's also true that two teams have given up on Russell Wilson in the last 3 years, and they seem to know what they're doing.
I'm not that high on Russell Wilson.
Okay.
So this
is a Justin Fields play for you. Okay.
And I think they're only saying that Russell Wilson is our starting quarterback because that's what they told him to get him to come there, because they didn't know for sure they would get the Justin Fields deal done. Hmm. And that if they had gotten the Justin Fields deal done first, they wouldn't have done the Russell Wilson
deal. So your expectation, if I'm going to pin you down, is that Justin Fields is going to play a meaningful number of games for them next season.
You don't have to pin me down. I believe he'll be the starting quarterback when the season starts.
Week one?
Yes.
And they're just saying this to coddle Russell Wilson.
They're just saying it because I think they told Russell Wilson he could be their starter. We'll trade Kenny Pickett away, and you will be our guy, because they didn't know for sure they could get Justin Fields. And now when they all of a sudden, oh, you'll take the sixth round pick? Okay, we got him. Now you got to say something to Russell Wilson. So, oh, yeah, Russell is their starter. Of that, there is no question. Why would anyone in their right mind, if they didn't have ulterior motives for saying it, say that about these two guys at this point in their careers? The upside of Justin Fields playing well for them is far greater than the upside of Russell Wilson playing well for them. Mm-hmm. Russell Wilson is 36 or something. Justin Fields is 25. He makes no money. So, and they have no financial obligation to him beyond this. They have every reason to find out what they have in him as quickly as they possibly can, because just maybe he is a diamond, right? Like in the rough.
Yeah, that's a good line of thinking. The line of thinking to which I object is the one in which the Steelers have massively upgraded their quarterback position and are going to win 11, 12, 13 games because of it. That world does not exist.
They won 10 games last year.
The Steelers aren't going to win one more game next year because of their quarterback play. They would have been better off just keeping Kenny Pickett and giving him year three in that offense, year one under Arthur Smith. I mean, Kenny Pickett has at least played.
If I told you right... Justin Fields has played a lot.
Justin Fields has
been a starter for three years,
and most of it bad.
And all of it in terrible situations.
Mm-hmm.
Generally speaking, all of it in terrible situations.
So you're certain that Justin Fields is a better quarterback than Kenny Pickett?
Of course I'm not certain, but if you told me I could have one or the other, I would take Justin Fields. In a vacuum, who would you take?
I would take Justin Fields in a vacuum.
Okay, to me that's it.
There's
no meaningful financial difference between the two, except that you have a little less commitment to make to Fields.
I mean, to me, I guess it comes down to this is just them patching up the Hindenburg. That's all this is. I mean, the roster is in decent shape. But when you fail to build the off-ramp from Ben Roethlisberger, this is what happens. I mean, the two legendary franchises when it comes to their stability, of course. The Packers, who always have a plan for their quarterbacks, and the Steelers, who always have a plan for coach, but in this case, not a quarterback.
But let me just ask you an entirely different question.
Mm-hmm.
The San Francisco 49ers moved heaven and earth to take a quarterback, and it could not have possibly went worse than it did in their case. And they were bailed out because someone you didn't see coming wound up playing incredibly well. Why is it less likely that Justin Fields turns out to be a good player than it was that Brock Purdy turned out to be a good player?
Oh, it's not less likely. There's just such an incredible, and in my opinion, unfair or unfounded benefit of the doubt that Mike Tomlin and the Steelers get. Like, if this is a move or a series of moves that almost any other team had made, the reception would not have been nearly as favorable. In reality, this has been an average franchise for the last 5 years. They've done very little right, and they got the quarterback thing terribly wrong ever since Big Ben. Why are we continuing to give them the benefit of the doubt because Mike Tomlin can go 9-8 every year? This team has been, they haven't won a playoff game since the 2016 season. We are just looking at the helmet, we are looking at Tomlin's resume, and prisming everything that they do through that. When in reality, the recent facts don't line up with that at all.
Yeah, but how many times have they been in the playoffs? I mean, the Steelers, if you count up the teams, so you said since 2016 is the last time they won a playoff game.
There's like 22 teams that have won a playoff game since
I understand
then.
That. Mm-hmm. But how many teams have a better record than they do since
I'll
then?
I'll pull it up. The Steelers won 12 games in 2021 in Ben's second to last
right.
season.
And they lost that playoff game to Cleveland right. at home. Mm-hmm. I remember the game. That was the COVID year, right?
Yes, it was.
So that was a weird year in every way. But I would guess the Steelers have won, like for the, and I'm not accusing you of being one of these people, but for all the people who try and tell me, well, look at the Cowboys, they mm-hmm. win a lot of games, they hang around the rim, and we're just ripping them because they don't win playoff games. I think the Steelers have won a lot of games over the last 5 years.
They have the fifth best record in the NFL in the regular season across the last 5 years.
That's not nothing.
It's not nothing.
A lot. It's much. It's a good deal. And the fact that they've done it with well below average quarterback play. So let's just live in a world where Justin Fields might give you average quarterback play. Mm-hmm. He might. I can't promise anything. Look, far better quarterbacks than him have been ruined by bad circumstances at the start of their careers. So maybe he has been. But there's something about the way that kid persevered. Like, I'll tell you, I was with some people from Chicago this weekend. They came in to watch to go to the Northwestern game with me. And we're having breakfast. And they were telling me how much, just, and they're extraordinarily passionate Bears fans. And they were in favor of the trade being made, but they love Justin Fields. Like, they just think he was the stand-upest. I'm going to use all the wrong, these are not mm-hmm. adjectives. The most stand-up guy, the best leader, put up with so much stuff, handle it all so well, all that kind of stuff. That, I mean, look at the way he's viewed.
Yeah.
And look at the way someone like Zach Wilson is
of
viewed.
Of course.
Look at how beloved he was in his own locker room. Justin Fields has an it quality about him. There are things in his game that are not perfect. I do not believe he will ever be the best quarterback in the NFL. But I do believe he has a chance to be a very effective player if utilized correctly.
Then why is Russell Wilson on the team?
Because they didn't know they were going to get Justin Fields. They signed Russell Wilson because he was basically cost you nothing, and they didn't get Fields till like 2 or 3 days later.
I mean, Russell Wilson is worse than nothing. He has a negative effect on your team in every conceivable way.
But if he starts having a negative effect on their team, they can get rid of him and it costs them nothing. And they can go out and sign any random backup they want to. Like, there, what I said in the tweet was right. There's no downside here.
No, I don't agree with that. Russell Wilson provides you a lot of downside. Russell Wilson is a radioactive force.
Well, if you believe that to be true, then they, unlike the Broncos, are in a position to get rid of him and have it be of zero consequence to their organization. The Broncos had to eat $40 million to get rid of him.
Of course, and the Steelers are taking him for $1 million, but what I'm saying is what they are doing, their strategy for quarterbacks is throwing darts. It doesn't work.
In the case of Russell Wilson, I would have agreed. In the case of Justin, I do. Sneaky Himbo, go.
Yes, Bubba, this one is for you. Who is Duke's leading scorer in the NCAA tournament since Christian Laettner? He played his last tournament in 1992. So, most career points for Duke in the tournament since 1993. That's the question.
All right, I like it. And the answer is next on ESPN Radio. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by.
NBA fans, listen up. You've got to try Pick 6, the newest fantasy app from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Getting started is simple. Select if a player will have more or less of a stat. For example, will a player have more than one rebound, or will a player have less than 3.5 assists? Pick your favorite players and compete for huge cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now using code Parlay and take on the competition with your best NBA player picks. Only on DraftKings Pick 6 with code Parlay. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date lists of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
Greeny, the podcast. This is Greeny.
Hembo, how long have I known you?
10 years.
We have written a book together. We are writing two more together. I spend as much time with you as I do practically any human being on planet Earth besides my wife. And I found out today I spell his name wrong. His name is Hembakitis, and I thought it was Hembikitis. I have an I where an E should be. So I think you have to go change the spelling.
This is Greeny.
Wouldn't life be better if that was the way things went? If everyone just had to make changes to accommodate what you thought. Greeny with you, presented by Progressive Insurance. In 30 seconds, we will take a shot at Hembo Trivia. We have a bunch of coaches talking that you'll hear in a moment as well. But first, this reminder that if you're dealing with a dead battery, you should head to AutoZone, America's number one battery destination, where they offer free battery services like free battery testing and free battery charging. Their free battery testing can help you know if you need a new battery or not, or if you're in need of a fresh charge. And if you do happen to need a replacement battery, they can help with that too. They're the only place you can find proven tough Duralast batteries. So next time you're having battery trouble, head to AutoZone, your battery solution and America's number one battery destination. All right, Hembo Trivia.
Who is Duke's leading scorer in the NCAA tournament since Christian Laettner? Another way of asking this would be, the most career points for Duke in the tournament since 1993.
Yeah, and I clarified, like, someone like Grant Hill isn't the answer because he was there with Laettner for 2 years and then two more, but those first 2 years wouldn't count. So I clarified that. We also clarified that, too much to Brandon's dismay, that the former Duke star and current Duke coach is not John Schneier, but just John Shire. Just to be clear on that, Brandon, because Brandon's guess was John Schneier, and that threw us all into a bit of a tizzy. Now, I have to believe Bubba is our best bet at getting this one right because he is a lifelong Duke fan who grew up with a dog named Hurley. So, who you got?
Yeah, I mean, I theoretically would be good at this, but I don't really. There's so many options. So, I don't think it's Redick. I thought about Battier, but I don't think it's him because I don't think he scored enough. I thought about Shire, but
Schneier.
Yeah, Schneier. I'm gonna go with Kyle Singler. I remember we had him from before with Jay when he was on. I know he's in the top five scoring. They won when he was there. He scored a lot, so I'm going with Kyle.
Kyle Singler. Who do you got, Cam?
Yeah, as I've said before, definitely not my area of expertise. So I was thinking Jay, just because I saw him yesterday, mm-hmm. and you know, association. But I'll go with someone who played with him and I think played 1 year longer, Carlos Boozer.
Yeah, Boozer is a good one. Who did these guys take?
Oh, we have Jack guessing Grayson Allen. And we have Brandon guessing John Schneier.
John Schneider.
Grayson Allen's a good one.
You know what? I'm not going to change mine. I was going to say Boozer. I was going to say Jay Williams. When I just heard Carlos Boozer, I actually now like that guess better. But I will stick with my guess. I'm not going to cheat.
Well, thank you for that.
So I'm going to say Jay Williams.
And the correct answer is Shane Battier.
Oh, Bubba said
Come
it.
Come on.
The most important thing, guys, is how long you played there. So Shane Battier, yeah. 278 points because he played 19 games. Jay Williams is second with 243, having only played 12.
God, it's the first name I thought of. Why didn't I just say it?
Jay only played 12 tournament games. They won a championship. He stayed 3 years. Jay was not a two and done. Elton Brand, if I remember correctly, was the first, we used to call them hardships. He was the first guy to leave Duke early. He played 2 years. I thought Jay played 3 years. Do I have that wrong?
You have it right. But in 2000, 2001, and 2002, they played 12 games.
They only played 12 games. Mm-hmm.
Where is John Schneier on that list?
Yeah, where's Schneier?
John Schneier is... Let's see. Okay, Schneier is on this list ninth.
And I don't feel like JJ was on the teams that went. Am I missing one? Was he on a team that went deep?
JJ was third. Yeah, he played 14 games and scored 223 points. Kyle Singler is fourth, having also played 14
okay,
games.
Okay, fair enough. We'll see.
Schneier's doing a great job in this tournament.
Yeah. I agree.
See if there are any new Duke legends to be made as they get set to play Texas in the Sweet 16.
Houston. Do you think he beat Houston?
What did I say?
You said Texas.
Oh, yeah, Houston.
Do you like him in that game?
I like Duke.
Mm.
Same
you?
State.
I like Houston a lot. I like Houston a lot. They're my pick to win the tournament. I'm not going to change.
I picked Carolina.
Arizona's going to be a tough game for them in the Elite Eight.
Can I make an admission? I picked Carolina only because I didn't want to pick UConn.
Me too.
Because I thought we would win Friday, and then I would speak at the pep rally Sunday, and I would have to stand there with people saying to me, as I'm standing there saying, we're going to beat these guys today, and people saying, who's your champion? And I said, well, UConn. I picked the other team to win the whole thing. That's the reason I picked.
So
Carolina.
It would have affected your speech.
It would have. It just would have made me look like kind of stupid.
I like what you did.
Yeah,
I like what you did.
I felt like I had to do.
And
it.
Look, if UConn wins, you're not going to win anyway. Your bracket. So
right, everyone else has.
That's exactly right. I did
and
the same
going
thing.
To win. Greeny presented by Progressive Insurance. At Progressive, they're making things even easier. We'll help you bundle your home and car insurance together so you can save on both. Learn more at progressive.com or 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. All right, we got good NFL sound bites here that Bubba has been frantically pulling. So the way this has worked, for those of you who've not been paying attention to it, the NFL owners' meetings are going on. Oh, they approved a big change today. Should we mention the kickoff rule?
I think so.
Pretty big change. If you haven't watched the XFL, then you're just going to have to try and imagine what I'm explaining to you. But the owners today adopted a new rule for the kickoff in the NFL for one season. So for at least 1 year, the kickoff, as you have known it all your life, if you are 56 years old, the way you have known an NFL kickoff to look for 56 years is now changed. Totally different. Here's how it works. The kicker will still kick the ball from his own 40-yard line. The guys on his own team, so the guys who are going to run down on kickoff, are now positioned just 5 yards away from the wall of blockers. So down like somewhere, is it the opposing 25 or 30 or something like that? They're all down there. One return man is in the back. And none of the blockers or the guys who are running down on kick, the gunners or whatever they are called on kickoff, none of them are allowed to move until the ball either touches the ground or is caught. So what you are going to see is you're going to see the end of the high-speed collisions. The reason they want this in there is twofold. One, it is just an inherently more dangerous play than normal when guys are getting ahead of speed and running 50 yards down the field as fast as they can, and someone's job is to break up the wedge. I mean, literally to throw himself into a group of people who have created a blocking wedge at full speed. These are just collisions that it stands to reason are going to cause more injuries than normal. And the other reason is because, as Jeff Darlington told us on TV today, 22% of kickoffs is the number that have been returned last year. One out of every five. That means four out of every five kickoffs was a touchback. Nothing could be more boring than that. So they're trying to give teams more impetus to run the ball back because the kickoff is an exciting play. And they're trying to take a little bit of the danger, a little bit of the risk, if you will, out of that play. It's a pretty good combination. I, for one, like it. What do you think?
I like it a lot. I'm a big fan of innovation, especially when we have proof of concept of it working very well in the XFL. There were nearly 2,000 touchbacks last year. It's a steadfastly boring play. There's no reason to do it. And now a touchback is rewarded to the team that goes all the way to the 30-yard line. So you're going to be incentivized to do the play. And so long as we can feel confident that it's not going to hinder player safety, and the fact that they've tested this out before indicates as such, I'm a big fan of the kind of like little kind of things that you can do to improve your game in the margins, especially when things are just so automatic. We recall, of course, a few years ago when they moved the extra point back, and I thought that was a success. We saw a few years ago, baseball decide, we're not going to make you throw four pitches for each intentional walk. People freak out for it for half an hour, and then they go on to like it, of course, because we have the proof of concept. So I'm a big fan based on what I've seen and based on what I've heard.
Bubba and Cam, like it, don't like it?
I don't like it.
Why?
I think I'm grouping.
You know what I learned about you yesterday, Cam?
What's that?
when you were here for the first time.
How wide he is?
Yeah, Hembo did say that.
You are wide.
You're a very negative person, and I've never noticed that about you. And
you point that out about me all the time these days.
No, but I never realized just how, like, I thought you would just get mad at things that we say, like, and when we're joking around, and everyone on this show jokes around at the expense of everyone else on this show, and I just thought maybe you weren't one who took to that well. But what I learned yesterday is that you're just kind of a sour person, and I mentioned
what
this
gave
to
you
Hembo,
that impression.
And Hembo said, "Well, could, if you walk into the studio for the very first time, you've never been here, you've never met any of the people here before except me, who you've met once, and you walked in and you seemed in a bad mood immediately.
Well, you have
8 o'clock in the morning. You seemed aggravated to be here.
I wasn't. You have no examples though. You're just saying that. No, I was not in a bad
did
mood.
Did anyone else feel
the
like
example
he was
is yesterday when we all lived it?
Crank him up.
You seemed
give
aggravated.
Me an example. What was I doing?
Just your whole demeanor, like
your temperament,
your
disposition.
So I
walked
said
in
to Hembo, and he said it's because he's from Philly. That's how Philly people are. Yeah. So maybe that's what it was.
I just don't. I'll admit to getting cranky when I get cranked up on this show, but I don't admit to being like a negative person in general. I walked in with Hembo to the studio and was like, "Hey, Greeny, you didn't say anything because you were doing something like your job, which is fine." And then you saw me later, and I said, "Hey, how's it going?" Like, I didn't do anything negative.
Yeah, you seemed unhappy.
You just
there.
Kept saying that, and then it became your truth. Like, I didn't do anything negative whatsoever. You just
truth.
Kept saying, "Oh, he already
it just
seen,
is the
oh,
truth."
Yeah, already seems cranky. Already seems cranky. Like, I wasn't doing anything. I was just sitting with Hembo.
And so, Bubba, you know what? Then Hembo then said, "That's what just being locked in a booth for 2 hours a day with Bubba will do to you."
Maybe that's it.
I don't know about that.
Yeah, Cam, did you come to ESPN miserable, or did Bubba make you?
I've been a very jovial person until about January 2nd of 2023. When I saw Bubba more than I saw, you know, anyone in my entire life.
So, Bubba, you took astray there for, like, no reason whatsoever in our meeting this morning. But anyway, I'm sorry. So I interrupted you. So you were telling us about how down you are on this new kickoff rule, cheerful Cam. Go on.
Why do you hate this?
Yeah, jovially, I will say, I think I'm just grouping it in with some of the other rules. So maybe it's not the kickoff rule as much, but the hip drop thing, I think, is just you're getting away from stuff for the defenders. But the kickoff rule itself, I'll have to see how it's structured, and I know they do it in the XFL, but it seems to me, and you can strategically defend against this if you drop people back, obviously, but you could just like get through that first line, and you have kind of like a free runway unless the guys are already starting and running back. So I'll have to see how people kind of play it strategically. You know, it's nice to bring the kickoff back, and I understand it's a lot safer, but I just don't like aesthetically really how it looks, but I just have to get used to it.
And also, I want to explain to this negative Nancy why I like it additionally, and it's because of the onside kick stuff. Like, the onside kick has basically been rendered a non-factor in the NFL. Over the last 2 years, onside kicks are 5 for 97. Again, a wasted play. Now you have the opportunity or the requirement of declaring that you're going to do the onside kick, and I think we're going to see these rates be considerably higher as well. And so the combination of these two factors.
Explain that. Why will it be higher? Now that you're declaring the onside kick, and that was the other piece of this.
You can stack 6 and 4.
Right. So, but you have to make that clear.
You have to make that clear.
Right.
That this is the thing that
I'm doing. You have to make that clear to the audience who doesn't know why you just said it's going to happen.
But I think that UConn could beat the Hawks.
No. No. What you just said was there are going to be more onside kicks recovered.
Yes.
But you didn't explain why.
My mistake. So what you can do now, what you're required to do now, is you can stack 6 and 4, like 6 of your players to one side, four on the other, whereas before that was not possible. So you're improving your math. You're improving the chances of recovering the onside kick. So even though it's not going to be a surprise anymore, it rarely was before, you have to declare it, you have the opportunity with the extra man to recover the onside kick, and thus you're going to have a better than 5% chance.
Yeah,
to do
it. So what you're losing in that is the element of surprise with the onside kick, which rarely comes into play. Now, there are a few legendary ones. Bill Cowher and Sean Payton both had legendary surprise onside kicks in Super Bowls that are great, and now you lose that. But, I mean, I'm literally talking about two plays out of, what is it, 58 Super Bowls or whatever it is. So, you know, it's not like that was a normal, a very common occurrence anyway. Bubba, you like or don't like the change?
I mean, I guess I'll have to see it play out. But obviously, I mean, I like it in the sense because kickoffs at this point from when I grew up to now have become so different and essentially obsolete. The kicker just kicks it deep. That either goes out of the end zone or they fair catch it. So there's no run backs anymore. So, you know, the growing up of seeing the Devin Hesters or before that Deion Sanders, all that's pretty much gone. So I would like to see more, you know, kickoff returns.
Great
so
point.
If it's going to lead to that and also safer, then I guess I'm in favor. I would like to see it. I agree with DeCam's point. It is odd looking. I definitely agree with that. It's a little weird to look, but I'm sure we'll just kind of get over that. But, you know, as someone who just, you know, when I was younger, saw all the people running back kicks and, you know, again, Deion, Hester, whoever it is, that's a super exciting part of the game that's essentially irrelevant now. They basically kick it through the uprights now, and that's just not enjoyable. So hopefully if you can get any sort of kickoff return now, I'm in favor of it.
Some data behind that, Bubba. Last year, there were a total of 4 kickoff return touchdowns in every game across the regular season. We've had as many as 25 of those in a season. That was in 2007. Bubba's right.
It's 24 of them were Devin Hester.
Yeah, it was a super exciting play that we've effectively gotten rid of. I think anything you can do to inject a little more intrigue into your game is a good thing. And there's no obvious reason to believe that any of these things that they've done are going to have negative side effects or unintended consequences.
The thing I like the most about it is the onside kick.
Mm.
The onside kick had become a waste of everybody's time. And thus, games that were not within one score late had become over. And now they are not. If you have a representative chance, I don't know what the right chance is. Like, who was the team? It doesn't matter who it was. There was a proposal, and we talked about it, that one team suggested rather than the onside kick, was it like you would get the ball on your own 20 and it's 4th and 15?
Yeah, that was a Philly proposal.
Or something like that, or your own 15 and it was 4th and 20, something like that. I kind of liked that idea too. I like an idea where there is still a chance to win, but it's not too good. You don't want it to get too gimmicky. Like, if a team plays better than the other team for 59 minutes, they should win the overwhelming majority of the time. But you do want to keep some hope alive. It just makes games more interesting late.
I don't have a way to look up surprise onside kicks versus regulars, but before the last 2 years, we can go back about 20 years, and you'd recover the onside kick about 16, 18% of the time.
Yeah.
That's a great number. That means this. That means when you're down, whatever, 12 points late in the game, and you score with, you know, 90 seconds left, there's not reason for me to change the channel.
Yeah,
it's not just about
you have a 1 in 5, 1 in 6
right.
chance.
It's not just, are they going to cover the number? It's are they going to get the ball back and win the game? And that's not something that we should lose sight of either.
You know what I'm remembering? There was a game years and years ago, and it involved Jason Sehorn of the Giants. And I'm trying to remember what happened, but there was an onside kick that actually got run back for a touchdown, and it tilted the point spread on a game that I was watching also. So, I mean, crazy things happen. The kickoff is a good play. Like, special teams are supposed to be an important part of football. And so they've made a change here that should bring some excitement back and make the game safer. That is a combination that only Cam could dislike. Like, I don't understand. The only person who I could imagine saying, well, I don't like it, is Cam.
I think I just want the old, like, exciting kickoff back, like Bubba was saying. If that brings us this, if this brings us that, then I'm for it, but I think I just need to get used to it.
They basically had two choices. We're gonna delete it altogether, and just you're going to get the ball at the 20 or 25-yard line, or you have to find a way to juice it up. And they found a way to juice it up for 1 year. It's worth a try.
I agree. I like it. It's one of the things that came out of the owners' meetings this week. There'll be more as we go. Coming up next, I just received an email that I think does an outstanding job of illustrating a point we made earlier that in the big picture might be the most important thing you will hear in sports today. I will read it to you next on ESPN Radio.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Greeny, the podcast.
Greeny with you here on ESPN Radio. And that's pretty much what we've done today, is just jump around from one topic to another. And been a lot of interesting things going on. NFL owners meetings, rules changes, coaches saying interesting things, gambling scandals in both baseball and basketball. All kinds of fun to be had here. NCAA tournament, men's and women's. Caitlin Clark almost got knocked out last night, which would really have been something, and whatever else it is. So we got all that stuff going on. But anyway, Cam put a pretty interesting little question of the day on.
You ask these questions.
Greeny's question of the day.
What is easier to notice missing? $4.5 million or 20,000 Jaromir Jagr bobbleheads? If you were with us a few weeks ago, we told you the story of the missing Jaromir Jagr bobbleheads. They have been found. According to Penguins President of Business Operations, Kevin Acklin, the Penguins were notified last week that a special cargo recovery team negotiated the return of the stolen property, i.e. the 20,000 Jaromir Jagr bobbleheads, to a secure warehouse located in Ontario, California. The truckload of Jagr bobbleheads arrived in Pittsburgh on Monday. They're expected to be delivered to the arena within the next week. The president of business operations said, quote, another chapter in the storied history of the Penguins. Stay tuned for details on a movie deal with Jean-Claude Van Damme.
This guy is a future in stand-up. Acklin is just like firing out his tight five every single
Jean-Claude
time he posts.
Is Jean-Claude Van Damme a very dated reference? Like, is he still making
Pretty
movies?
Old. I can't imagine.
Is he still making action movies? Like, I remember Jean-Claude Van Damme, but I feel like it was a very long time ago. How old is Jean-Claude Van Damme?
63.
Okay, yeah. So, like, what was his last big movie?
I mean,
like, why would Jean-Claude Van Damme be the one making the movie about the retrieval of the Jaromir Jagr bobbleheads?
Yeah, he's got a movie coming out in 2020 or came out in 2024, but
okay, fair enough.
What's it about? Jean-Claude Van Damme's 1995 action film Sudden Death took place inside the team's former arena during a Penguins playoff game.
Oh,
so there's the reference.
There you go. So there is an explanation.
This Acklin guy is good, man.
So you owe Acklin an apology. He is funny. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. It's a funny question, but there's a real obvious answer. No one could possibly not notice 20,000 Jaromir Jagr bobbleheads being missing. But no one could possibly notice $4.5 million being wired out of your accounts either. So I'm going to read you portions of an email I literally just received while we were sitting here, just to illustrate this point. This was an email which was sent to me by someone who works in the office of my accountant. So to be clear, I have someone who is an accountant. That person has someone who works in his office. She's the one who emailed it to me. He, the accountant, is copied on it. So are two people who work at Morgan Stanley, where they handle my money, and my wife, Stacy. It describes an SOS filing that is due March 31st in the state of California for $25 in order to file some sort of thing. And then there's a notice for something from 2021 that has a balance of $572 due, and that they have we have requested abatement, but blah, 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 one thing or another. We owe them $572. And here are the steps and the number of people who have to be informed of this so that $572 plus $25 can be taken from your account today to pay the government this money. That is how many checks and balances were jumped through so that Stacy and I could be made aware that, what does that come to, $597 are going to be taken from our account and wired to somewhere else today. Multiple people have seen it on the email. Multiple people have to act to execute it, and I have to approve it. So that's $597. Now, I understand Shohei Ohtani has a lot more money than I do, but there is no one who has so much money in any account that $500,000 at a time could be wired from it to anywhere and not have anyone notice It's one thing for Ohtani not to know. He may have business managers and all sorts of other people who control his money completely, and he trusts them fully, and all that is fine. People have signing power, privileges, all that kind of stuff. But A, the idea that his interpreter would be one of those people strikes me as odd. But B, even if he was, you don't just wire $500,000, which is what they say each wire was, the increments. You don't just wire $500,000 on Zelle. Like, that doesn't work that way. There's no app for that. You don't just do that yourself. Many people, I'm going to say a minimum of three people, and probably more in every case, would have to be aware that this was going on. So just the version of the events that is being offered absolutely does not stand up to any scrutiny.
And I think that there is a chance that the Dodgers as an organization feel the same way that you do. Because if the Dodgers, I'm speculating here, I want to make it clear I'm speculating, but if the Dodgers knew for sure that what Ohtani is selling is 100% true, I find it hard to believe that someone from the organization would not have been up there yesterday either with a prepared statement or to field questions. But it was not. It was Ohtani and his translator, and that was it. That is their story, and that's how they're telling it. I am dying to know if the Dodgers themselves are buying it, because if they were, I have a hard time seeing Ohtani on that island the way that he was. What do you think?
I think you're right. I mean, I see what you're saying. Now, there might be some element of this. I feel like I think this because you've told it to me, that Ohtani is a person who very much controls everything around him. Is that right?
That's right.
He is in control of his image, of his this and his that. That's not necessarily a negative thing. Lots of people are like that.
I have heard, just not to interrupt you, but yeah. I have heard anecdotes, stories about Ohtani that I could not believe he was so detail and attention oriented.
Right.
So the idea that he would miss this, given the fact that I know those things, is even unlikelier.
Fair. What I meant by that was, though, he might have said to the Dodgers, I don't want anyone else up there but me. I mean, that would be another
Maybe
explanation
so.
For this. Look, the bottom line of it is, there are things that seem hard to explain that I accept as explicable. Then there are things that I do not think are explainable. Like, someone was able to nine different times wire $500,000 at a time to an illegal or a bookmaking operation that is being investigated is impossible to believe. Like, there's just no way that happened. So I don't know what happened, but that didn't. This one person did not execute this all by himself. There's just no way that happened.
And if there's someone in Major League Baseball that is listening to this right now, just be transparent with us. Major League Baseball has gotten itself into so much more trouble historically by doing the opposite. See the steroid scandal. See the Astros sign-stealing scandal. There's going to be a reflex in that office to handle this with kid gloves, because Ohtani is your most prized asset. But the truth is going to come out one way or another. It's better that you uncover it than someone at ESPN or some investigative reporter for the New York Times or anyone in between.
Yeah, I think that's right. Look, I don't know exactly what happened there. I feel like I have a pretty good idea of what didn't. And it is, there's no good way this ends. Like, there's no way this ends well. It's very difficult for me to picture an ending where he winds up not having been involved in literally anything, and it winds up being a blip on the radar and having no impact on him or his career.
Do you think there's any chance that we learn that it was Ohtani and his translator that actually stole the Yager bobbleheads to pay off the debt?
Ah. $225
a pop gets you to $4.5 million.
That's the thing. Like, you can't misplace 20,000 bobbleheads. And you can't misplace $4.5 million of someone else's money that easily. It's one thing if you found some brilliant way to embezzle it, or, you know, they had it stuffed in a pillowcase someplace.
Ain't what happened here.
Once you start acting wire transfers or enacting them, you got a lot of people involved. All right, we'll see where it all goes. And we'll see you tomorrow on ESPN Radio.
Thanks for listening to Greeny the Podcast. You can listen live each weekday morning at 10 Eastern on ESPN Radio. Or watch the show through the Watch tab on the ESPN app. Also catch Greeny on Get Up, weekday mornings at 8 on ESPN. And also available wherever you get your podcasts.